I'm going to do something today that I have never done in all the years that I have had this show. I'm going to bring to you somebody that I worked with as a young police officer. We were young cops together, and this guy has done it all. He worked his way up to police chief, then he got involved in other areas, training. He now owns his own company. We're going to talk about all of that. Ray McGurry, welcome to the show.
Betsy, great to see you.
So, Ray, I'm going to ask you what I ask every single retired cop that I bring on this show. Why'd you become a cop?
Great question. I grew up in a family of civil servants. My father was a Chicago firefighter for 40 years. My uncle, Frank, was a Chicago police officer for 33 years. I actually, as a weird side story, I was actually a pre-med student. Going to be a doctor. And one day a friend of mine walked in, and I was working at McDonald's in a Cook County Sheriff's outfit, but he was a cadet. And I looked and I said, "Kenny, what are you doing? You're not, 21. You can't be a cop." He goes, "Oh no, this cadet program is, incredible." So from there, that's why my mother doesn't talk to me anymore. So I said, "Boy, this looks kind of cool." And from there, wound up working with the Cook County Sheriff's cadets, and I guess the rest is history. And I don't regret any of those decisions. My mother, as I said before, probably regrets I didn't become a doctor, but it was the right decision.
And it's an incredible career. It's an incredible mission to be a law enforcement officer. And you had a really extraordinary career. Talk about that for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I was I've been blessed. I mean, and I don't take that lightly. Started, as a police officer in 1980. I was Barney Fife. If those of you that remember Barney Fife, I couldn't carry a gun. I couldn't carry a gun. I turned 21 in the police academy. Worked for a short time in a town called Palos Hills, Illinois, and then came out to Naperville. And I remember a friend of mine saying, "You ought to take this test and get the heck out of Cook County. It's not the place for you to be." And he goes, "You should go to this place called Naperville." And I go, "Naperville? You know what I mean?" And so, long story short, I wound up signing up and taking the test. And growing up in the city of Chicago, I felt like, "Would I have to pack a lunch to get to this place? Where the heck am I going?" So spent 20 years and a couple weeks in Palos Hills. I'm sorry, in Naperville, and then left Naperville and became the chief of police in Bolingbrook, Illinois. And certainly, different community, wonderful community. Unfortunately, was tasked with dealing with Drew Peterson and that fiasco, and I learned a lot about media relations. And you're the expert on that, Betsy. But certainly, I learned trial by fire because I had some experience. But that was an interesting time, to say the least, in my law enforcement career.
So you were, you were involved in training, on some different levels, and now you work with civilians. Talk about that.
Yeah, so and I want to preface this by saying, because I don't want a bunch of people emailing you or texting you and saying, "What does this guy think he's saying?" I'm trained in what's called Krav Maga. So it's an Israeli form of self-defense. All martial arts are good. I don't think there's a bad one. But for self-defense on the street, Krav Maga to me is superior in that it's simple. I'm 6'4", about 250. We just did a seminar a couple of weeks ago, and that seminar was for women only. And many of them, all of them obviously are short, smaller than me. And by the end of that seminar, just doing some basic things, they can absolutely destroy me quickly. But you just got to know how to do that. I think, I mean, I do some jujitsu. That's all great, but there's not 20 kicks you have to learn. There's not, it's simple punches, simple things, to protect yourself. The number one thing we talk about is, and something you say all the time, and I've heard it on your podcast, I've heard it certainly in the national media, is situational awareness. Is the best way to avoid anything that we're about to train you in is don't be there. Be gone, recognize it before it approaches you. But once it approaches you, if you can't run, then you have to learn how to defend yourself.
You know, and that's one of the biggest concerns in talking to, you know, retirees and talking to civilians, talking to people who have, you know, kids in college and things like that, is worrying about crime. And you and I, we were young cops in the 90s when we saw, and in fact, when you and I, we started the same year on the job, we were regularly losing about 250 cops a year. And so on into the early 90s, crime in the United States was rivaling the levels that we see now. And that, you know, was everything from the Mariel Boatlift to the proliferation of street gangs and things like that. We're back to those 90s crime levels, but some of the crimes are different. One of the biggest crimes that we hear about around the country is carjacking. You know, you're near Chicago. It's a huge problem in Chicago. It is the number one violent crime in Washington, D.C. right now. What do you tell people on A, how to avoid carjacking, and B, what to do when it's happening?
Well, I'll go in reverse. So if it's happening to you, you know, and the popular ones now in Chicago are at gas stations. We're seeing a lot of those at gas stations, off ramps, believe it or not, off of expressways. We're seeing them there. Besides the ones at the gas stations, diversions is what they're you know, creating. So you pull up to a stoplight and you get a tap on the passenger window and you look over and it's a young lady screaming, you know, I'm being attacked. Can you help me? You can help me. And you divert your attention for a second. The next thing you hear is a tap on the left side window and there's a gun looking at you. Now I tell people, obviously common sense, give them the car, give them whatever they want. Okay. If there's a child in the car, you take that child out, you know, and if they're screaming, leave the child there. And this is a personal decision. I'm not leaving my kid there. All right. The other thing is what I tell people is that they'll tell you, all right, move over and get into the passenger seat. I'm not going with you anywhere. I'm giving you the car. Bad things are going to happen 9 times out of 10. And again, I don't have 100% on this. If you leave with that person and let them take you to a place, statistically, it's going to be a bad thing. So we talk about that a lot. We actually do a seminar. We did it in Naperville last year, and good and bad. We did it at a car dealership. A friend of mine who owns the dealership gave it to us on a Sunday, you know, when they're off, showed a brief, you know, 30-minute discussion, got done, took them out in the parking lot, and we carjacked everybody. So everybody that we had just talked to, we carjacked, and it's simply distractions. People say to me, well, what should I do if I pull up to a stoplight and, you know, I'm about to be carjacked? I said, well, if you can get out, drive over the person, do whatever you have to do. But it goes back to everything that we talk about, even in the self-defense seminars, is justification. Justify the actions that you took. Why did you do that? Below the light. Do what you have to do to remove yourself. Create distance between you and that problem.
Do you recommend that people get their own personal dash cameras?
I've been in a couple of cars. I don't have one personally, and I have nothing against those. I love technology. Here we are. We're using technology. We've gotten away from the human element. We're relying on, okay, well, this camera will capture, as opposed to common sense, and you're pulling up to a stoplight or you're pulling up to an intersection, is using these and using your ears and being able to see what's going on. I mean, everybody's got these, okay? I love mine. However, I'm as guilty as anybody, you know, else is that sometimes I will take my mind off of something, look down really quick to see who just texted me. And it's again, Betsy, you remember this. We've talked to a lot of criminals. What you talk to any criminal, they will tell you, I'm just looking for an opportunity, okay? And, you know, we talk about with victimization, you know, about walking down the street and you see somebody, and I tell people, you know, that person's making you uncomfortable, eyeball that person. Don't drop your head. Don't start looking away. You've just become a victim, all right? If you at least identify them and they identify you, they're going to wait for the next victim. So it's kind of the same way with the carjackings that we, you know, that when we talk about those, is that, again, situational awareness, just being aware of what's going on around you. If something doesn't feel right, I mean, you go back to your gut instinct. Your gut doesn't feel right, it's probably not right.
You know, a few weeks ago in the national news, we heard a lot about the case of Lake and Riley, a young nursing student out running in her own neighborhood on the campus where she got her bachelor's degree. And she was accosted by an illegal alien. She had her head bashed in. She was dragged into a remote area. He interrupted her 911 call. You know, it's so horrific, that type of situation, but it's not entirely uncommon. What do you recommend to young women and their parents who want to avoid that situation?
Well, again, I'm always an advocate of we you can't live in a shell. I mean, you have to live your life. She was jogging, it appears, on a remote type. Well, it was off the campus, but a remote area. That's no fault of her own. I mean, she should feel safe there. Always people when they're out with jogging, and I don't know, I don't have the facts on necessarily if she was wearing AirPods or not, but I always tell people, take one of those out. If you're jogging by yourself, take one of those out. I've always subscribed to having some type of, I mean, and again, we can get into handgun stuff in a second, but a coup baton, something that you carry in your keychain, but you got to carry it with you. You can't put it in your purse. You can't put it in your pocket. So meaning if she's out, that you're out on a run, you have that accessible next to your water bottle, something that you can use to fight off somebody that obviously in this case, in many cases, was much bigger than her. And this goes for men too. This isn't just a women, man thing. This is men running down the street in jogging, take an AirPod out, be aware of what's going on around you. I don't know the facts again as to when she realized this guy was behind her or coming up on her. But that would be one thing. Know the landscape of where you're going to be going. I always say, you know, for joggers, and I used to, when I was training for a marathon a zillion years ago, I jogged on the Prairie Path. You're very familiar with the Prairie Path. It runs through Wheaton into West Chicago. There's some areas there, even as a guy my size, I'm like, we're getting into, you know, remote areas. So again, think like a criminal. As my first FTO told me, if you think like a cop, the only thing you're going to catch is a cold. That's it. You got to think like a bad person. How would a bad person attack me? Okay. And if you think that way without being paranoid, you're apt to be in a better position than someone that's just, you know, and again, it sounds terrible that we live in the world we live in today, but I don't want people to just think, you know, absolutely shelter themselves and go, well, I just listened to Betsy and Ray and we're doomed. No, just be aware.
And, you know, that's such a great point. We talk about that all the time. You know, it's preparation, not paranoia, you know, but it's hard to be, it is hard to be not paranoid. Now, I live in a state that we have constitutional carry, you know, virtually anyone 21 and above who's not a felon and all that can carry a firearm. And where I live, people take advantage of that. You live in a state, Illinois, where there are a lot of restrictions on whether you can carry a firearm and even what kind of firearm you can own, things like that. Now, the National Police Association, we are huge proponents of the Second Amendment, of people getting armed and trained if they want to carry a firearm. And I'm guessing people ask you all the time, you know, in your classes and just in general, should I get a gun? And should I carry it? Talk about that.
Okay, great segue. Yes, I live in a state that is total opposite, obviously, in Illinois from what Arizona is. As recently as 2 weeks ago when we did our self-defense seminar, I had a half a dozen of the women come up and say that, you know, we want to purchase a gun. And again, I go back to what I said before. This other seminars we've done, it's been men and women. And they said, what kind of gun should I get? And I always start out with this. I said, all right, why do you want to get a gun? I know what the answer is. Well, you're an idiot. I want to protect myself. Okay. I said, having been involved in a deadly force incident in early before I came to Naperville in my career, I said, Do you have the capability? Do you believe you have the capability to take that weapon, draw it, and put two in my chest and two in my head? And this is exactly what you hear. I don't know about that. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't at least go to the range and try. But what I'm telling you is that if you don't have that in your DNA, that's okay. You're not a coward. You just realize I'm not that type of person that could pull that trigger and shoot somebody. Okay. So then you're gonna have to think of other ways in which you can defend yourself, and we can train you for that. You know, I don't go anywhere without my gun or my knife. I have a knife with me at all times, you know, because I'm more apt to have to get, if I'm going to get attacked, it's going to be a knife thing. Am I an expert in knife fighting? No. Do I know enough to make me semi-dangerous? A little bit. Okay. But we're not the norm. You know, you and I and the people, you know, obviously that are probably watching this podcast, we think probably alike. But when you talk to somebody that doesn't think like us, it is helpful to certainly tell them you need to think these things through. Now, the next step is, yes, I could absolutely put two in your chest and be fine. All right. Then what you just said, training. Don't go for your concealed carry and then you don't go back to the range until you have to renew your concealed carry. I'm not saying you have to be there 5 days a week, but 2-3 times a month. One day, I mean, and a lot of these ranges now, one out by me, this is so family friendly. So it's called 355 range. They're phenomenal people. You have a husband and wife date nights. It's things of that nature to bring you together, take away that stigma. So the training is massive. The other thing I tell them, and this kind of shocks them, is that you have to know your rights. And when I say know your rights, I mean this. I love law enforcement. I've loved law enforcement my whole life. I'm very proud of the career and I'm very proud of the opportunities. However, if you happen to use deadly force on somebody, my suggestion to you is that you don't make a statement to the police right away. Is that you remove yourself, go to the hospital, get checked out, make sure there's a couple incidents that you and I dealt with back in Naperville, which with shootings by one of our two of our officers. And one of those officers, you know, was exhibiting signs, believe it or not, at the hospital of some stress. Not on the street, they were fine. So create time and distance, get yourself checked out, and then call your attorney. Yes, you will cooperate with the police. You've done nothing wrong, hopefully. But to me, that to me is sound advice, is opposed to, all right, what happened? And we were cops. We want to know the facts. What happened? You know, and you're looking at a person that's laying on the ground, obviously that may be deceased. You want, tell me what happened now. I don't know that I don't feel well, whatever you want to say. Now, and again, some people may say, well, that's horrible advice. Okay, that would be what I would do.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That is something that I know we talk to people about here, is because it does, it creates a lot of stress on your body to be involved in an altercation. And it does seem like, you know, we are seeing that everybody now, because everybody's got, you know, a cell phone and all that. We see a lot more video of these really high level attacks. And we seem to have such motivated offenders again, in, you know, all around this nation, not just in, you know, the big blue cities, but, you know, on into the suburbs. You know, we see incredibly violent, motivated offenders, you know, in part because a lot of them know not much is going to happen to them. So it can be a really difficult situation to be involved in an altercation like that, you know, not just physically, but emotionally as well. And is that something that you talk to your students about that mental preparation, if you will, of not just dealing with the altercation, but the aftermath of it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I mean, there's the, you know, the post, as you just mentioned, of what happens after that. And, you know, that gets into, you know, a little bit about, you may need to go talk to somebody to help get your mind right around this. It's a devastating thing. I mean, again, back in my career, when I was involved in that, I was a really, really young officer. That situation was interesting in that it was a bank robbery, and responded and got into an altercation with two of the bank robbers. There was no, I would say, like, okay, we're gonna have you talk to somebody, make sure your mind's right. That was basically you sat in a room by yourself for 3 hours until the shoot team showed up from the county and took a statement from you, and then was a good shoot. So you were congratulated by saying, well, you know, we're going to take you for drinks. Okay, well, I'm a rum and coke guy all day long. However, thankfully, those things have changed, because there is not only for officers, but certainly for more so for citizens, that just absolutely terminated somebody, you know, because they had to save themselves. But now what happens after that?
Yeah, absolutely. Chief, I wish we had about another 2 hours to talk, but we're at the end of the program. Where can people find you, follow you, find out more about the training that you do and all the great things that your organization does?
Yeah, if people go to rjmstrategygroup.com, you can find me there. Last thing I'll leave you with is this. When we talk about self-defense, you're the best first responder is you. The police will come eventually. You have to be your best first responder. You cannot rely on law enforcement. I don't say that negatively. I just say that factually. We could be a minute away, or we could be 5 minutes away. So your best first responder is always going to be you. So you need to deal with that.
That is so incredibly well said. And I thank you so much for sharing that with us and spending time with us today. And if you would like more information about the National Police Association, visit us at nationalpolice.org.
Ma'am, put the gun down! Put the gun down!
Last year, law enforcement officers were involved in hundreds of thousands of use of force incidents. A use of force incident is when an officer must use nonverbal tactics to gain control of a dangerous situation.
Put the knife on the ground.
In many cases, officers have no choice but to use force when a suspect doesn't comply with a lawful order.
Use of force is always ugly. No one likes it, especially police officers.
Together, we can help de-escalate these dangerous encounters. Help police officers by complying with their lawful orders. Don't attack, attempt to disarm, or flee from an officer.
Use of force is an officer's last option. Most incidents can be avoided by not resisting arrest.
If you feel you've been wrongfully detained by a police officer, then seek a legal solution after the encounter has been resolved.
Let's keep everyone safe. Comply now and complain later.